Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Hey, I wonder if President Bush was attending church Sunday. Did he? No, maybe he heard a tape of the sermon. We talked about taxes at Denver Bible Church on a Sunday morning in the sermon from the pulpit. How could you talk about that? That's political. Well, Jesus talked about taxes. We were in Luke chapter 20, and the Lord talked about taxes, so it's religious, it's biblical. You know, virtually every important topic is religious. And so at any rate, I want to tell you what we said about taxes. See, conservative Christians coming from the Bible, the strength of the Bible, we have the answers to the problems of America and the world. And other people don't. But so I'll tell you what we said about taxes and what George Bush said about taxes. And that Christians really do have the answers if we take the Bible seriously. But before that, just real quickly, I've been a Christian now for 30 years. And I've seen schools all over this country. And let me tell you about the very best school I've ever seen, ever. Maranatha Christian Center in Arvada. Over 100 on staff, professional staff members, Christ-centered, top academics, affordable, and all this for your kids, ages 2.5 to 12th grade. Call Maranatha Christian Center if you need a school for this September. Call now. It's not too late. Call 303-431-5653. That's Maranatha, 303-431-5653. And please tell them you heard about the school at Bob Enyart Live. Okay, Sunday morning, we're talking about taxes because Jesus was asked, should they pay taxes? And at the time, Israel was occupied by the Roman Empire, an evil government. And Jesus said, show me a coin. And they showed him a coin. He said, whose inscription and whose picture's on there? Whose image? And they said, Caesar's. So the Lord said, render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and unto God the things that are God's. And so in the Bible, God affirms the necessity of paying taxes. If you live in a civilized society, then the government in the Bible, God shows that the government has the authority to do two things. There's only two just functions of government: to deal with criminals at home and abroad, so like police and courts and armies. And the other thing is infrastructure, things that we have to share between us, shared resources like roads and bridges and water rights and harbors and airwaves. So that's it. Criminal justice, like the police and the army and the courts, and infrastructure, like roads and waterways and airwaves. So those are the two things that government should do. And to do those things, it needs money. So it has to tax. There are two extremes to the tax issue. The one is the liberal issue that what do liberals say on taxes, on tax cuts? They say, don't mess with taxes, right? The more tax, the higher the taxes, the better. That's the commonly the liberal position. The other extreme is that it's wrong to charge taxes of your citizens and to pay taxes. And that is not as popular, but it's completely destructive. And I mentioned in our Sunday morning sermon at Denver Bible Church that the few people that hold that position, that they will not pay taxes, they end up with nothing. Whatever they did have, they lose. They lose their wife, they lose their home, they lose their business. And in the end, what do they leave? The Bible says that a wise man leaves an inheritance to his children's children. But a tax protester like that ends up leaving nothing but the car he lived in, unless he's already lost that, his debt, and his bad reputation. That's all he ends up with. So Jesus said, they asked him, should we pay taxes? He said, let's see the money. And he answered, yes, pay taxes. So, but George Bush, so we talked about that Sunday morning, and we also added that God authorized a certain form of taxation in the Bible, a certain mechanism. How do you tax people? They're all different ideas. There are tariffs, right? Tax products coming into the country at the borders. There's property tax, utility taxes. There's a value-added tax where if a manufacturer takes a raw material and melts it down and puts it into a mold and makes a part out of it, then when he sells it to another manufacturer, he charges a tax because he added value. So, and then there's the sales tax, retail sales tax idea, where when you buy something, you pay a tax. And the person selling you a product or a service, they have to collect a tax and then forward it on to the government. And so the question is, or there's an income tax, a progressive income tax where the more money you make, the higher percent of income you pay. I remember when I was young and I first learned about taxes, my Uncle Don in New Jersey told me, he's dead now, but he told me, I was aghast. I was shocked. I don't know how old I was, 8 years old, 10 years old. He told me that in America, the top tax bracket was 90%. And that if you made $1 million, you had to pay $900,000 to the government, which, of course, is evil. Not that people weren't able to avoid that, but that's fundamentally evil. In the Bible, in the book of Samuel, God says that if the government is taxing you 10%, that is like stealing. That's criminal for the government to take 10%. And in America, you might think that the government doesn't take all that much. If you're especially naive, you might think that. But the government spends half of what we produce as a nation. So if they spend half of the GMP, you know what that means? That means that our tax base is effectively 50%, our tax rate. We pay, as a nation, half of what we produce. And one-fifth of that God describes as stealing. All right, let's go to the phones. And so we're talking about economics and Christians. And Christians who take the Bible seriously have the answers regarding economics. Some Christians think you need a sales tax. You don't need a sales tax. A sales tax, in fact, and that's what Bush said. We'll get to that in a little bit. But President Bush said on Tuesday, I don't know if he was trying to a little spin control for the sermon at Denver Bible Church. He didn't want it to make too much headway. But on Tuesday, the president said that abolishing the income tax and replacing it with a national sales tax was an idea worth considering. This out from Reuters. And he said that he thinks that we should seriously explore doing away with an income tax and going to a national sales tax. And of course, there are many conservatives who are pushing that, and that's a really, really bad idea. And Bush is, I think, saying it's worth considering because he wants to energize that segment of his base in this election cycle. But the government does not have the right to force anyone to become a tax collector. Does that make sense? Think about that. Compulsory forced labor, conscripted as a tax collector. It's wrong. The government does not have the right to force you to become a tax collector if you're a businessman. I debated about 8 years ago. I debated the nation's leading advocate of the national sales tax. We did a one-hour debate, and the first question I asked him was, does the government have the right to force you to become a tax collector, a businessman to become a tax collector? And he said no. And I said, well, debate over. I won. You lost. You just admitted the government doesn't have the right to implement your system. But then we went on for another hour and pointed out all the other problems with the national sales tax. But let's go to the phones in Littleton, Colorado. We're talking about economics today. Let's see if this fits. Wendy, welcome to Bob and Yurt Live.
Thanks, Bob. I was just calling to say thank you to you for a previous lesson that I'd heard from you on if the government has a right to tell employers what to pay employees. And I had listened to you, and then it came up in a conversation.
Right, because Jesus said in Matthew chapter 20 that he says, do not I have the right to do what I will with my own money, with my own property? And he talked about paying workers different hourly rates. And people were bitter about that, envious. And he said, look, it's my money. It's my money. I should be able to pay this guy twice as much an hour as I'm paying you if I want to. Are you envious? Are you bitter? Because I'm good.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, I did. I brought that up in, an environment of liberal women. It didn't go over very well.
Uh-oh. Well, what did you bring up? How did you bring it up?
Well, I just specified that I didn't think that anybody should have to pay women the same amount as men.
Whoa, Wendy, you've got guts.
I try. So I brought that up, and they disagreed entirely, but at least I had something to talk about and make them think.
Yeah, that's a good point. And why is it? Is it because at Denver Bible Church, we don't like women? And so we say...
No, absolutely not.
No, the reason is because, first of all, Jesus said, it's my money, it's my right. So you have to deny people freedom in order to control them and tell them what they have to pay their workers.
Right. But and what I tried to tie it into as well was what I had actually heard you teach about was that that actually forces women into the workplace.
Exactly. When the government interferes with the economy, people tend to not do what they would do if they were living under freedom.
Correct.
And under freedom, here's what people would do. We have 100 million families in this country, and most of them have a mom and a dad and kids. And most of them, they would prefer it if the family could survive and thrive on the father's income and the mom could raise the kids. That's what most moms would do if they could.
Right.
But they feel like they can't afford to live in a nice neighborhood or have a reliable car without a second income. So they're forced to put the kids in daycare and mom to go and struggle through rush hour traffic and office politics. Whereas if before the government said you have to pay women equally, what happened was men were paid more. And more men, a greater percentage of men, had wives who could afford to stay home if they wanted to. If they wanted to. So millions of women had the option of staying home when businesses paid men more.
Right.
And what the women who fight for equal pay, what they don't realize is, you know who they're taking that money away from? They're taking it away from the stay-at-home mom with two or three little kids at home who's now going to be forced to go to work because her husband has lost 30% of his income.
Yep.
That's who they're taking the money away from.
Yeah, I actually had the discussion with an aunt of mine who was unable to stay home, and she just, the whole time we talked about it, she just sobbed and said how much guilt she had every morning when she went to take them to daycare. And so it was very obvious that women want to stay home.
So you have a relative who's going to work, dropping the kids off at daycare, and someday a daycare worker making $8 an hour is going to hear mommy from your aunt's little girl.
Isn't that terrible?
Yeah, and so mom is not going to be the first one to hear mommy. Daycare worker is.
No, but I'll tell you what, I'll be the first to hear mommy from my little boy.
Oh, well, that's neat, Wendy.
Good. Well, I just wanted to say thank you for your teaching.
Oh, God bless you. I appreciate that. And how important that is, because not that we could turn things around overnight. How do you do that? It took a long time to stop slavery. But it's wrong for the government to rob the freedom from individuals. Until if I have a business and I've got a guy working for me, and he has a wife and three kids, and the wife stays home with the kids, and I'm paying him, say, $18 an hour. And now, I could, maybe I have enough business to just bring on maybe a second worker, and it's a woman. And her husband works, and she doesn't have any kids at home, and she's going to do the same job. But I tell her, look, if you want to work for me, I'll pay you $12 an hour, $14 an hour. And then I could afford these two employees, and I want to pay the husband more because I'm supporting him. My business is supporting him, his wife, and their three kids at home. And so I hire her, and then she's a feminist, and she goes to the government and gets a mindless liberal judge, and they threaten to take my business away. So I can't print the extra money, so I have to pay him $2 an hour less to give her $2 an hour more. And that's what happens over the years and the decades when the government, feminism, and mindless liberal Christianity has allowed our economic system to be turned upside down. And millions of moms end up going to work, moms who would rather be home. And that's who we're talking about. The moms who would rather put their kids in daycare, institutionalize their little kids for 50 hours a week, those moms, I'm not talking about them right now. We'll talk about them another time. I'm talking about the moms who would rather be home but are forced to work because of feminist and now liberal government policy. And by the way, the vast majority of politicians, they don't have the courage to talk about things like this. It's too politically incorrect. Okay, 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278. We're going to Tulsa, Oklahoma. Dan, speak your mind.
Here in Oklahoma, we have Indian casinos.
Yeah.
That they don't pay any income tax or sales tax.
Right.
But, of course, they do what's called Class 2 gaming. I was wondering if it'd be okay, in your opinion, for a Christian to work at one of those places.
At a casino. Well, the question is gambling a sin or not? I'd say that's the big question. If gambling is a sin, then we got to look at it much more carefully. If gambling is not a sin, then it seems like the answer is easier.
Yeah, I would say that's the first question, and then there's a second question
okay.
in my mind.
Well, let's deal with that firstly. The passage I just brought up with the caller, with Wendy in Colorado, was that Jesus in Matthew 20 said, is it not lawful for me to do what I will with my money, with my property? So if someone wants to take a $100 bill and take his wife out to Ruth's Chris Steakhouse and have a great dinner and go to a movie— let's say that's not immoral. Now, you might say, well, that's a lot of money to spend for a meal, but it is okay to splurge and to entertain yourself and enjoy yourself. The Bible frequently talks about spending a good amount of money on feasting and celebration. So it's okay to do that from time to time. So gambling is a form of entertainment, and it's a sin to spend the rent money and to hurt those who depend upon you because you're irresponsible, but it's not a sin. It's not a sin to entertain yourself and to gamble. A real sin, here's a real sin, legalism. Inventing rules, a new standard of righteousness that that you impose on others. And you keep your own standard of righteousness, like thou shalt not gamble, and then you feel self-righteous, and others who don't meet your standard of righteousness, you're self-righteous, and you look down on them. The Apostle Paul describes this, and he says it puffs up people. And he says it looks, there's an appearance of wisdom in self-imposed religion, but it's of no value against the indulgence of the flesh because it puffs us up and makes us prideful. So, Dan, gambling is not a sin. And therefore, working at a gambling place, it may not be the most positive environment in the world, but it's not inherently sinful.
Okay, but because it has a stigma associated to it by legalistic Christians, would it be wrong for me to possibly offend them by working there?
Well, the Bible talks about offending the weaker brother, right? Don't offend the weaker brother. For example, about alcohol, we could read about alcohol or eating meat sacrificed to idols. And if there's the weaker brother, you, out of love, you want to be concerned about offending these people. But what I have found is the people who take offense at these legalistic things are the elders of the church and the Christians who have been Christians for 30 years and Sunday school teachers. They're not supposed to be the weaker. They're supposed to be mature and strong. And so I think we could use that and come to a sort of a standstill where I say, well, if you do that, you offend me. And he says, well, if you do that, you offend me. Okay, so now nobody could do anything. So anyway, I would say, no, when it comes to a career, you don't need to be concerned. We've got somebody at Denver Bible Church has been working at Coors for 25 years. And hey, that's fine. You know, Coors a while back started advertising homosexual in homosexual magazines. And so for a while, we called it queer beer. And a Christian liquor store in Denver stopped selling Coors for a while. But anyway, no, I'd say you don't need to worry about that.
Well, I have an opportunity to do that, to make more money to support my family.
Yeah, well, if it's more money, I'd consider it seriously. It might end up not being a good work environment. You might not enjoy it. So I'd look around. I wouldn't jump at that as my first chance. If I'm thinking about moving, that's when I really pray for wisdom and look for a lot of opportunities and try to pick the best of two or three options that I manufacture.
All right.
Okay, Dan.
Thank you.
God bless you. Appreciate the call. Let's go to Denver, Colorado. Scott, speak your mind.
Yes, I enjoy your show, but the one issue I would take with you about this flat tax thing is the idea that, you know, yeah, is it right for the government to tell you, you know, whether or not you should be a tax collector? But by the same token, from the consumer side, if you want to talk about economics, yeah, I'd rather be able to choose my money where I want to spend it on an item that I buy versus having to give the government 28%.
Okay, yeah, well, it shouldn't be 28%.
Well, whatever it is, well, I'd still rather be able to say if I want to buy a waterbed, for example, and spend my 20% there, I'm better off than having to give it to them, whatever.
All right, let's talk about that. The equity of a flat tax, 5% maximum flat tax on your income versus a sales tax, okay? And you're saying it's not fair because I might not want to give the government any of my money. But because you live here, you don't have the right to live and do commerce and not pay taxes. So we do have an obligation to pay taxes. So the question is, what is the best mechanism for collecting taxes? And Scott, well, you brought up the equitable issue, right? Or
well, I guess what I'm trying to say, Bob, is that, okay, to me, I think it's okay for a sales tax because you can choose what you buy or don't buy.
Well, not if you're poor.
You don't have to have a new car.
No, wait, Scott, not if you're poor, only if you're rich. Think about this. Bill
but the
Gates,
poor are not going to be on the high end of that anyway.
Listen, Bill Gates makes, say, $3 billion a year, and he spends $30 million a year, okay?
Right.
So under your system, he would be taxed whatever percent on 1% of his income, 1%, while the average middle-class family that spends everything they take in order to survive, they're taxed on 100% of their income. See, it is inequitable no matter how you look at it. In the Bible, God had an economic problem to solve, and this was it. He had to collect money from the entire population of the country in order to fund a central budget to run the priesthood in the temple. And God could have implemented, he could have said, let's have a tariff. Let's tax foreign trade. Or he could have said, let's have a property tax. Or let's have a sales tax. God could have done all that. But the method God used to collect taxes was a flat income tax. That's what God said that Israel should do. Why did God say that? Because it's the most equitable. It's fair and it's easy.
And I'd be okay with a flat tax too, I guess. I just would rather have something like that versus the way it is now.
Oh, yeah, the way it is now is criminal. But let me give you one other reason that national sales tax is terrible. To fund the government, that costs a lot of money. So however you're going to tax, it's going to cost a lot. With a sales tax, the system encourages even strangers to conspire to defraud the government. even strangers. Let's say there's no income tax and we all pay a sales tax of 18%. And so two strangers meet and one's going to sell a lawnmower, a ride-on lawnmower to the other. They're complete strangers. They cut a deal. They pay cash under the table and they conspire together to defraud the government. When your system of government is not godly, the system itself produces wickedness.
I'll buy that.
All right. Hey, thank you.
Thanks.
Scott, God bless you. Appreciate the call. And there's so many other problems. From an economist standpoint, there's a transaction cost. Every time you do a transaction, like here at Bob and Yurt Live, if you buy a copy of the plot, our overview of the whole Bible, we have to process that. You either send us a check or cash wrapped in aluminum foil, or you give us a credit card number. And we have to process that, and it costs money. Every transaction costs money. Whatever it costs time and resources, material, paper, computer memory, bandwidth on a phone line. It costs money. And so compare the transactions for annual income tax versus a sales tax. An annual income tax, once a year, every worker has to do one calculation to figure out, okay, what is 5% of my income I made last year? Does that, and then he sends that off. That's his tax. With the national sales tax, 1 billion transactions every day. 1 billion, 400 billion transactions a year. Over 1 billion a day. 400 billion transactions a year have to be kept track. You got to keep track of them, calculate, process, do the income tax. You got to organize it. You got to deal with that money. And you've got the transaction costs for sales tax are astronomical. In other words, it costs a lot more money to do that. And just out of the time and the stress and the thinking, you got a business, a startup. Let's say you got a young kid, 18-year-old kid, he wants to start a business. And it's hard to start a business and to start competing. And what does he have to do? He has to also become a government tax collector and comply with all the regulations. You know how complicated that is? And the organizational skills it requires or the technical sophistication? And then he collects this tax every month and he has to be responsible with it. And even though it's in his cash drawer, he has to not spend it. That's hard for an 18-year-old kid. And you put young people and people with less capabilities, you put them in the hole because we don't know how to run a country in a godly way. Hey, this is Bob Enyart. By the way, I just mentioned the plot. You know what's exciting about understanding the Bible? When you deal with others in business, neighbors, friends, and family, when you understand the Bible, you come from a position of strength. When you have a solid overview of the Word of God. And I've devoted 30 years to studying Scripture, and we offer the plot. It's our best-selling Bible materials. We've got it for those who like to read. We've got it in a manuscript form, 330 pages. For those who like to listen, we've got it on two audio CDs. So give us a call and or go online, kgov.com, and ask for the plot. The manuscript is $49.95 plus shipping and handling. The CDs, you can order the plot CD for $32.95 or the tree, which is the sequel, for $32.95. Check it out online. You can find out more about the plot at KGOV, KGOV.com, or call us at 1-800-8-NYARTS, 1-800-836-9278. This is Bob Enyart reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.